Are you ready to sell more books? I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm Claire Taylor. If you're ready to get your books into the hands of the right readers
and make some more money,
you've come to the right podcast.
And now it's time to talk tips, tricks, and news to help you sell more of your books. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Sell More Book Show, episode 433. I'm Brian Cohen from Author Ad School, joined by Claire Taylor from FFS Media. Claire, between last week and this week, you concluded a $25,000 Kickstarter.
I did. Yes. We hit that final stretch goal at $25,000 with like 70 minutes left in the project. Yeah, but we did not hit the benchmark where I have to do a diss track of you.
Of me.
I didn't pass yours. I was about $150 short of diss track.
It was close.
It was. I was like, man, can I call in some favors here? But I did not.
You beat the heck out of my first author Kickstarter. So if you wanted to do a diss track, you could. But I love when, you know, obviously you get surveys out, you're doing all this stuff for the fulfillment, but this was definitely beyond your expectations.
Oh, yeah. It was way beyond my expectations. And honestly, I mean, it passed, you know, getting funded, it was all just kind of a bonus to me. So that was very fun. Yeah, I was just really happy to see that 290 people wanted in on this. So
yeah,
I was not expecting that at all. I'm definitely gonna do Kickstarters in the future. But now it's just that like fulfillment phase. And I'm just, oh, man, I am just feeling my way around in the dark on this. So hopefully everyone gives me a little bit of a break on it, because I was looking at BackerKit and then I was like, I don't think I need BackerKit. So now I'm just doing spreadsheets, and which is kind of my comfortable place. I like spreadsheets. So it's getting done. I'm getting everything on the calendar and I will be getting it done. But I will be having to go full tilt because we got so many bonuses and I did not have those. I did not have those built into my production calendar. So I think
neither do I.
Yeah. Some books are going to have to be bumped, but we'll see. We'll get it done.
But in the service of all those happy backers, it'll be worth it.
Yeah. And if you backed and you got some of these bonuses and some of these workshops, you got a lot coming up. I was going through it. There's like 5 live classes.
Yeah.
And some of them have to be split into 2 groups just because they're so big. So lots more on that.
That'll be amazing. So thanks to all the Sell More Book Show backers who backed Claire's campaign, who backed my campaign, who backed Monica's campaign. It's just awesome. It's a really good feeling to see all of y'all out there helping us out. So thank you.
Yeah. And congrats to the super backers who backed all 3 of ours at the $25 level and are getting what, like 9 bonuses?
9 other bonuses.
Oh my gosh.
It's a lot of bonuses.
Yeah.
It's probably too much.
Never too much.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, awesome stuff. I closed out our quarterly author ad school promotion with the challenge. We had 4,000 people taking the challenge and 125 of them joined author ad school. So we're excited to play in the ad sandbox with those new wonderful folks. So awesome. Well, last week's question of the week was, if you had to pick one project to give your full attention to, which one would it be and why, and which projects would you let drop? I'm not sure everybody did the dropping thing. Emily Michelle said, I've just done this. I dropped my leadership role in my kids' school's PTA so I can concentrate on writing and marketing. Very good, Emily.
Yeah, that sounds like pursuing joy right there.
Yes.
Okay, Joanna A. McKeithen said, I'm very tempted to do TikTok, but still very uncomfortable about the whole app program. Very interested in Kickstarter and would love to know more and perhaps run a program to fund my next audiobook.
But what are you going to let go, Joanna? Joanna's in ad school, so I know Joanna. You can let something go. And Ariella Zoel said, I'd work exclusively on writing my Alistair in Wonderland project and quit worrying about promo in a perfect world.
Yeah. Someday we'll get to that perfect world.
Someday.
And I actually won't be able to handle it.
No. That just like the Matrix. All right. Let's go into the tips. And you're up first. Here we go.
And now on the Sell More Book Show, it's the tip of the week.
Slow and steady. When you have a long-term plan for your series, it pays to be patient when it comes to marketing, says Chris Fox. And Chris Fox is certainly that. With 3 books in his series currently published and plans for at least 10, Fox is pouring all of the profit from the sales of book 1 into ads, and with the goal of getting more readers hooked on his series. Quote, I'm using what I've dubbed catch and receive ads in tandem to land sales, Fox says on YouTube. I use Facebook and Instagram to raise awareness and get mailing list signups, which is the catch part, says Fox. The receive side is on Amazon. I'm running Amazon ads defensively so that when a page loads, my reader sees me at the top, not my closest competition. I make sure that readers see my books again and again, so I am always top of mind. Between these two ad types, Fox spends about $800 to make $4,500. But don't try this at home until you've watched Fox's entire video where he breaks down his ad spends, read-through rates, and explains how he experiments to come up with a system that works for epic fantasy, a hard genre to crack. If you've got a long series planned, check out Fox's latest YouTube video on how he's marketing his fantasy novels with great success.
We don't always have higher level tips here, but this is definitely a higher level tip. Some people watching this, listening to this, might have heard run Facebook, Instagram, and Amazon ads. But that's not what Chris just said. Chris said, essentially, I am building an audience through Facebook and Instagram, through mailing list subscribers, but I imagine also using retargeting. He's able to retarget people who see his ad, who spend enough time on it. And so that is kind of his offense. His defense is anytime someone is looking for epic fantasy, he wants to come up, which what I'm interpreting that as being higher bids than are necessarily meant to get him a profit, but are helping him profit anyway due to all of the other stuff that he's doing. And so that is higher level. That is like startup stuff. That is entrepreneurial stuff. It's not necessarily the thing people are usually thinking about with self-publishing. What are your thoughts here, Claire?
Well, I think we don't talk enough in general about defensive ads. And that is a big part of my strategy as well, is that I don't want anyone else's ad popping up on my sales page. And so the ads where and it seems counterintuitive, like, why would you run ads to your own name and your own series for your books? Like, they already know about you. That's not necessarily true. And you don't want them to get distracted. So the ads that I run to my own books, to, you know, my own pen names or titles or series names, anything like that, they get a lot of clicks and sales. So they do work, and it keeps someone else's book from being there. So it's been an effective tactic for me, but I think a lot of people don't think about it, and they feel like that might be money wasted because the person's already on your page. But sometimes if they're on your page, I mean, think about if you're browsing and you find an author and you're reading their book and you go, oh, this looks kind of good. Then you realize they have this other series that has, you know, 1,000, you know, reviews on it and a 4.5 star rating. And you're like, oh, they're an established author, right? You want to get that visible so you can get that on your sales page. And that person might be more likely to buy at that point because they see that you have a track record.
Great points. Great points. All right, second tip. Oh, how you've grown. Sometimes writing can be discouraging, and it can often be difficult to see how far you've come as a writer, say the folks at Kobo Writing Life. Measuring one's own growth as a writer isn't always easy, but by following a few tips, you'll be able to see how much you've grown. First, revisit your old writing. Challenge yourself to find something you wrote exactly 1 year ago and compare it to what you've written today. Go back as many years as you can, and you're sure to see how much you've grown. If you still have trouble seeing the difference, ask a friend for help. Keeping a writing journal can also be enlightening. Make notes of the things that you struggle with, and later on, you'll be able to flip back and see things that you've now mastered. Quote, unlike a garden, it's hard for us writers to see how far we've come when it comes to growth, says Kobo Writing Life. A writer's development isn't always as obvious as a branching tree or a blooming flower, but with every new work written comes signs of growth and change. I haven't done this in a while, but I definitely used to sentimentally go back and look at some of my old writing. And it's always amazing to see, like, yes, there's a few flourishes, but it's like, oof, that's a little bit rough there, old Brian. And that is normal, which is a good thing for today, Brian, or today, you. Claire, what are your thoughts on this?
I would never do this.
tell me
why. Okay, I'll tell you why. My inner critic is too strong. And if there is a way to go back and change it, then I will become hung up on it. But I'm a recovering perfectionist, so that is what it is. So you're a recovering perfectionist, I would say be careful with this, because if you go back and you see that it's bad or you find typos, your brain can easily get hooked onto that. And it's very hard for you to move on with your other projects until that's fixed. That's going to weigh on you. But if you want to look at progress, you could look at other things. You could look at, if you've kept your stats on your writing, you could say, hey, look, my writing speed has increased. Right? Because that's something you can't go back and change. You can't get hung up on it as much. So I do think that there's a benefit in charting your growth. And that's why, you know, when you make a to-do list, if you do things outside of that to-do list, put it on the list anyway, because you did it. And because you want to give yourself credit when you go back and look at the growth, but or the accomplishments. But if this is going to be painful for you, and if you know that you're the kind of person who can't let it slide, if you find stuff that you think should be better, then this is dangerous territory.
Yeah. And that's a perfect example of different people, different types of people, different strengths of different people are going to get different things out of these exercises. Yeah. And so some would, some wouldn't. It's good to know yourself so that you don't put yourself in a bad mental situation.
Take a moment and think about it first on whether or not this is going to work for you.
Yeah. Agreed. Awesome. Tip number three is over to you.
Review the reviewers. There are a lot of ways to get book reviews these days, but not all are created equal. Quote, while Amazon doesn't let you pay for reader reviews, you are allowed to pay for and share a professional book review, says Patty Thorne for Build Book Buzz. There are many legitimate review sources available, including companies that charge a fee for an editorial review. Unfortunately, there are also many scammers willing to take your money and return a substandard review. A poor quality review won't convince readers to buy your book, let alone help get your book into bookstores or libraries. Thorne has a few questions you can ask that will help you tell the difference between legitimate review sources and fakes. Is a reviewer respected and well-known in the industry? If readers don't know the name, they aren't likely to put much trust in the review. Does the book review company tell you who the reviewers are? Reviewing books is a difficult job that requires expertise, so reviewers must be qualified. Do they sound too good to be true? While a $50 review would be great, that's likely not enough to pay the reviewer fairly, and that's going to be reflected in the quality of the review. It's also important to check out the quality of their previous reviews, so be sure to ask for examples. While everyone dreams of a rave review, you need to do your homework to get the real thing.
So I included this as one of the Roland stories that he found. I included this because there's still a lot of people who go and pay for Kirkus reviews. There's still a lot of people who go and pay for these reviews. I don't think they're completely without merit, but it feels to me like it's not a top five thing to spend your money on. Claire, in the beginning, when you were first self-publishing, did you ever engage any of these kinds of services?
No, I thought about it, but it just didn't. It didn't seem like something I cared about enough.
Yeah.
Frankly.
No, I definitely thought about it as well. And I've seen they advertise a lot. You see a lot of ads for Kirkus. I know this in part because Kirkus has a large enough audience that it can be targeted as a Facebook ad when you're trying to target authors. So I know that Kirkus has been advertising for a fair bit of time. And when there's a really good Kirkus review, we'll consider using it in a book description or something, which is kind of in a gray area of terms of service. So it's better to put it in editorial reviews, but there's some benefit to it. But could you spend that? I don't know how much Kirkus is, $100, $150. Could you spend that better? I think the answer is probably yes.
Yeah, I would agree. Put it towards the cover.
Yeah, 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 agreed. All right, let's go into the top five, and it's me.
It's time for the Sell More Books Show Top 5 News. number five.
The big one. The U.S. Department of Justice's bid to block Penguin Random House's acquisition of rival Big Five publisher Simon & Schuster, which would leave us with the Big Four, is ready for court and set to begin on August 1st, reports Andrew Albanese of Publishers Weekly. The witness lists include Big Five CEOs, major literary agents, best-selling author Stephen King. The case is being watched by experts in many industries, and it's being seen as a key test for the DOJ, the Department of Justice, amid growing calls for more vigilant antitrust enforcement. One key difference with this trial is that the case is focused on the potential harm the deal poses to author payments rather than on any alleged harm to consumers. One company of that size and scale would yield, quote, outsized influence over who and what is published and how much authors are paid for their work, end quote, say DOJ attorneys. Another unusual aspect of this trial is that regulators don't usually seek to block deals that have left more than three major firms in a relevant market, and this would still leave four. Quote, that is, until you consider the scale of a post-merger Penguin Random House, says Christopher T. Sagers, Cleveland Marshall College of Law professor. In essence, the size of Penguin Random House would leave it more like the big one in relation to the remaining big four. Who are the lobbyists for publishing? Because this would not be getting attention unless, like, the government was getting something out of this. That's my big question after reading this. It's like, who got paid and who is paying? Because it's a little bit strange to me.
I wonder what side Stephen King is testifying for. Does it say? Well,
if the trial is supposedly about the outsized influence over who and what is published, one would imagine that Stephen King is on the side of the big four, but I could look deeper.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's an issue, but from like our little perspective,
our tiny self-publishing perspective.
I mean, yeah, it's like, okay, let them fight. You know, I mean, I'm definitely not one to be like, yes, monopolies, we love them. But
yep,
there are other options for people who want to publish books. So I think even if the big five became the big one, it would not really limit options for writers. It would just limit the traditional publishing option, which some people, you know, still value. And that you got to take that for what it is. But I think that it's not going to hurt people. I think we just have a huge amount of indie authors coming in.
Right. And if this did go through, if it did happen, we would probably have more.
Yes. Yes.
Because mergers always shed authors and shed editors and shed industry people because there just aren't enough seats anymore.
They've been made redundant.
Exactly. Exactly. That caused me pain and I've never even had a real job. So let's go on to number four and it is yours.
Number four.
Disability in publishing. If you're trying to be more inclusive in your writing and publishing work, you'll find what you need at Disability in Publishing, a new organization run by and for disabled publishing professionals. The organization launched on July 22nd, coinciding with Disability Pride Month. Founding members of Disability and Publishing are comprised of industry professionals from various facets of publishing, including literary agencies and Big Five publishers. Quote, our mission is to create community, provide resources, and increase accessibility across the industry in order to increase disability visibility and retain the talent of disabled publishing professionals, they say on their website. Quote, we will support each other through advocacy, education, networking, and community. We are committed to working from an intersectional perspective, end quote. Authors can find agents, editors, and freelancers under the resources tab along with job listings and events.
All right. So I didn't see much about indies being involved in this, but this seems like a positive thing for sure. I mean, a friend of mine was doing a Kickstarter for a book about children's or middle grade about a disabled heroine. It was not the focus of her story that she was disabled, which is always right. The challenge with this. It's not just, oh, look at this diverse character, but then the character is nothing but a caricature of a person with that disability. I think that that is the real important thing for us indies to consider is it's not just about representation. It's about three-dimensional representation of these characters. Claire, any additional thoughts on this?
Yeah, well, I think that this is long overdue. I'm actually surprised that this is a new group, considering how many authors in traditional and indie publishing are writing with disabilities. It's just much more common than I think people realize. So maybe this will bring some awareness to that as well and help people who feel like they're the only one dealing with this find some community.
Agreed. And it was Vera Warden was the name of that book by...
Oh, fun.
It was like Goosebumps with a Disabled Heroine. It's by Jay Rose. So I wanted to make sure I put Jay's name out there for that book since I mentioned it. So I was like scrambling. But yeah, overdue. It's there. Let's get to that second level. All right. Let's go to number three. And it's me.
Number three.
Aggressively Google. Google's book platform has long been a frustrating mystery to many authors. First, it was hard to get in. And then when you didn't really sell many books. But things are starting to change now that more authors are using it and more Google associates are being interviewed. If you want to make waves on Google Play Books, read Monica Leonel's breakdown of Draft to Digital's interview with Ryan Dingler, a product manager at Google Play Books. Quote, Ryan had some different and interesting recommendations than what is conventional knowledge in wide circles about product page optimization, says Monica. The latest recommendations from Google Play Books via Dingler are to keep your book description between 200 and 1500 words. Do not use a block of keywords at the end, as some recommend. Instead, incorporate relevant keywords naturally into your descriptions. Use only three subject codes for your categories, listing your most important category first. Quote, Google appears to be focusing more heavily on what Ryan called a series experience, and to ensure to get your books placed correctly, make sure your series data is exactly the same, taking care that even capitalizations and extra spaces at the beginning or end are matched or removed. Dingler mentioned other related products and services, some available now and others coming soon. So be sure to stop by the post to read the breakdown or watch the entire interview. I just want to point out here that sometimes when a retailer has tips, sometimes they are not accurate. I just have to put it out there because I know from working with retailers before that sometimes they've been on the job for 2 months. Sometimes they've never used the platform themselves. And this is the talking point. And they're saying a talking point. I don't know if that's the case with Dingler, but I want to say that out there because I don't know if people should necessarily go changing a thing, expecting it to necessarily immediately have results, because I've heard some weird advice from retailers before that didn't actually end up being a good tip. So just wanted to put that out there first, almost as a disclaimer, with no knowledge of how much the person Monica interviewed has been studying the platform and using the platform. So
what would be your deciding factor? Like, how would you decide to proceed if you didn't necessarily take all retailer advice at face value? What would your next step be?
It would be to see, well, have some successful indie authors tried it? Have some people tried it? Has it been one person saw this experience or 20 people? It's like page flip videos on TikTok. It's like, okay, at first it's like, well, one person had a big month because of just these page flip videos. It could be just a fad. It could be a thing. But then you see like dozens and dozens of authors saying, well, I didn't think it would work, but I got more sales. And you're like, oh, so this has been tested now. Now I would feel comfortable to spend time on it. But not until I saw people really saying, I made these changes. I started selling hundreds of dollars more a month on Google Play.
So you would go around collecting data, essentially.
I would collect data. Yeah.
Yeah. And see for yourself. Yeah. I mean, that's it. That's a good thing. I would say that it seems pretty safe to assume that getting all of your series data in sync would definitely help.
No, I would say that probably makes sense.
Yeah. And it's good to have these little insider tips of, you know, they're pushing series, that sort of thing. So you want to make sure that that's something you focus on, that consistency and continuity there, so that you are removing as much, you know, as many barriers as you can.
Yeah. Yeah. That totally makes sense. And, you know, I had to be the skeptic on this one so that you could be the optimist.
Thanks for, I can always use a break.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I try. All right. Let's move on to, you know, just to build your skepticism back up. Let's go into number two, and it's you.
Number two.
Indie inclusivity. The Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America, Inc., SFWA, has opened up its membership requirements, making admission easier for many working writers, including indie authors. This past winter, SFWA members voted on new requirements, which went into effect in March. According to their press release, the goal of these changes is to allow the SFWA board to set requirements based on current industry standards, to simplify the guidelines to make them more inclusive, and to recognize the diversifying income streams of speculative fiction creators. Accordingly, a candidate shall be eligible for full membership if their catalog of paid work in science fiction, fantasy, or related genres equals or exceeds $1,000. To be eligible for associate membership, their catalog of paid work must equal or exceed $100. Proof of earning will be guaranteed by affidavit in both cases. Earnings can come from any combination of categories that SFWA recognizes as eligible to join the organization, including traditional indie, work for hire, and self-publishing creators who work with prose, games, comics, graphic novels, screenwriting, and other forms of speculative fiction storytelling. Quote, our new system embraces the myriad mediums and career paths of our genre creators today and in the future, says SFWA President Jeff Kennedy. Quote, I'm excited to welcome every new member who can now join us.
Wow. I don't want to be a part of any club that'll have me as a member. No, I feel like I've probably been tough on these kind of organizations in the past. It's
well, look, some of them have very much deserved it.
Well, this is a good point. This is a good point. Look, I mean, it would be so easy to just say, well, someone needs more dues. But
it would be very easy to say that. It's very tempting to say that.
But look, I know some indies have wanted to be a part of these organizations for a long time. And why should we rain on their parade and say, well, you shouldn't join? It's like, if you want to join writer organization, you join a writer organization. This is a very well-known writer organization. And it's cool that indies who might have wanted to join have the opportunity now.
Yeah. And I mean, if this is the kind of place where you can go do networking and that's just opened up to you. So if you are someone who has not been in this for a long time and who did just become eligible for membership, you might really want to consider getting in on it, because that means that you're going to be able to, you know, be in at the events and that sort of thing where you get to meet people who are farther along than you.
Yeah.
And that's important, you know. I mean, you have to understand that they're probably busy, but you know, seeing people who are farther along than you can go a long way towards recognizing the opportunities that you still have.
Yeah, this is true. I think that if you want to try it and you want to connect with other authors, no reason why you couldn't join this organization. Let's go to number one. Da, 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 da.
And now the number one top five news item.
Old school tool. Author life can feel like a never-ending treadmill, and when you're stuck on full speed, it can be difficult to see how you're doing in your business. One simple way to regularly check your progress is to use an old school tool of conventional businesses the performance review. Far from a pointless exercise, reviews are super useful, says Dan Parsons of the Self-Publishing Formula. View it as a positive tool that helps you assess your business choices and identify ways to improve, end quote. A financial review helps you gather an accurate picture of how much money is entering and leaving and can help you detect problems before disaster sets in. Next is output. Writers write, but if you find yourself writing a lot of words, but not publishing many books, then it is important to see what you are writing that's holding that up. Consider the people in your business. I quote, identifying your team's strengths and weaknesses can help you run a better collaborative environment, says Parsons. Periodically reviewing your business processes is also important, as is looking at your emotions. Da, da, da. Stepping back gives you the breathing space you may want to question whether what you're chasing is what you actually want, end quote. A business review might not feel worthwhile at the time, but a few hours spent on one can inspire revelations you will never have if you keep working and never question yourself. I really like the idea of this in theory because it gives you the opportunity for reflection. And if there's anything I've seen that authors need in their author business, if they're stuck, is reflection. Because too many authors will not reflect, think that they're changing up tactics, but in reality, they're doing the exact same thing down a different path. 3 to 6 months of their life goes by, nothing changes, and they wonder why. And the answer is they did not have adequate reflection to determine what it is that they did not do or what it is that they did that is not going to get them to where they want to go. So that is why I don't think this is a snooze fest. I think this...
No, me neither. Not at all.
I think this is good. What are your thoughts here, Claire?
Yeah, I do this pretty frequently with my business. You know, I should probably get it on a schedule of some sort, but it's usually when I'm like, oh yeah, I haven't checked in on this in a while. And I have, you know, an hour to kill before a call or something. I'll jump on and do that. But it can be painful. I think that's important to note.
Yeah.
That's why people avoid doing it, because the fear of it being painful, and that fear is sometimes justified. But it can also really release you from a lot of things. So if you feel like, oh, I don't understand why everyone else around me seems to be having success and I am not getting it, rather than letting that, you know, take you down the trail of the world hates me, the world's against me, go back and look at this. And it may be that you find something painful, like, oh yeah, I really wasn't putting in the words that I thought I was. Or, oh yeah, I really didn't do the marketing I feel like I had done. And then you can start being realistic, and that's going to free you from envy. And that is very important if you're going to keep moving forward. So, you know, all growth work is pretty painful, but recognizing that it could be painful and doing it anyway is how you get ahead. So, you know, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be a masochist, but if you expect to not have any harsh realities, you're in the wrong business, you know, and just in life, that's how it works. So yeah, these can be painful, and sometimes they can be really uplifting, where you look at a month that you felt was a struggle and you realize how much you actually got done. And that can show you, oh yeah, okay, I need to stop beating myself up. So, you know, you have to let the chips fall where they may with, once you look at this sort of thing, and just accept that it is what it is, and determine how you're going to move forward afterwards. But it can also help you with planning to not go based on how much you feel you should be able to do in a month or in a quarter or in a year, and realistically say, well, the best indicator of what I can do next year is what I did last year. So not what someone else did last year, not what someone else is going to do next year, but what I did last year. And then you can plan around that, and you'll feel much less disappointed with your life when you don't feel like you're behind all the time.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. That really ties into this evaluating your emotions with things, because so often I've seen, especially with folks doing advertising, is they're not actually looking at dollars and cents. They are feeling certain things about their dollars and their cents and their royalties and their spend. And that is influencing them a lot more than what the data is actually saying. It's why I wrote self-publishing with Amazon ads the way I did, where it's a story where you are seeing the person dealing with the emotions of trying to run ads. Because there's 20 books that you could read about ads. And I've read several and they're very good. And I've picked up tips in them. But very few go into, oh, yeah, this is going to make you feel terrible because that's how these things work psychologically. And I think that we need to remember that. And we need to remember that the first time such and such successful person wrote to market or ran an ad or tried out a tactic or hired a VA, they felt a lot of feelings. But
yeah,
they didn't necessarily talk about that so much.
Right. And I recently did this with my crime fiction pen name because I was kind of going on. I knew that it was going to be an investment up front because I was like, I'm shelling out for editing and for covers. And, you know, we're going to run some low ads, just try and prime the pump a little bit. But I'm not going to go too hard, you know, on the marketing until I have three books out. Well, my third book just released today and I'm not doing anything for it. And the reason why is because I went and I audited and did this sort of, you know, this check on that pen name. And it was so far in the red that I was like, okay, we're done here. we're done with this. And, you know, and seeing that was horrifying. And it definitely brought the mood down for the rest of my day. But it also then freed me up to say, okay, that's one thing off my plate. That's kind of nice, you know. And with this launch, I know like this is not going to be the series I want it to be right now. Maybe I will relaunch it in the future and it'll have more success, but this is not where I want to put my energy. And so it frees up my energy for other things because I had that really painful experience and just looked at the actual numbers. And it was not good, y'all.
It hurts. I've had number moments like that too, Claire.
And yeah, no. And sometimes I look at the numbers and I'm like, oh, wow, this is way better than I thought. So it's not always bad news. But, you know, that bit of pain really benefited me in the end because I don't have to put my effort towards this launch and it's not a forever thing. I'll probably write more books, but then I could start to go, yeah, this wasn't a really good model because I was spending so much per book and writing such thick books that it became expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, 500 page books are hard to break even on because they take a while to write, you know? So it was like, okay, this is just objectively not the best model for making a profit. And that's kind of where I'm at right now, making profits. So...
And it's good to know what your goals are.
Easy decision. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We need a question of the week. We're all over the place talking about business report, creating your own business evaluation, performance review, the indie inclusivity for both the sci-fi and for disability, Google Play. You know, we also have Chris's defensive advertising and measuring your own growth. Where do your question proclivities lie on this
Friday? Oh boy. Well, I think the one that probably the most people can relate to and respond to is the growth check.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I know. Right, guys. Ugh.
Blah. So do you feel more like Brian, where you enjoy looking back at your past writing and feel a sense of accomplishment of your growth? Or more like Claire, where you would rather gouge your eyes out than look at your old writing for fear of wanting to correct every error. And why? So you can answer that question of the week over at sellmorebookshow.com in the comment section for episode 433. You could also, and our apologies, it looked like our blog didn't work for a few days where our post didn't go live. So our apologies about that. We scheduled it. You can also go to the Sell More Book Show After Party group and you can post it on the question that we have posted there. So we need a hot potato of wisdom. Claire, I hear potatoes are great for waking up.
I'm awake. I mean, I am trying not to drink caffeine right now. So I'm awake-ish considering. I don't, you know, okay, I don't have wisdom, Brian. I don't have any wisdom.
I'm happy to be the wisdom.
Okay. Yeah. You take it this week. I'll get it next week.
So I am having a lot of fun trying some new things in the business. And it's very easy when you're trying new things and you're open to new things to get distracted by other new things, because you've already kind of opened up. You've already opened up to universe. I'm open to opportunities, but there are false flags. There are things there that just because you heard about a cool thing doesn't mean it's the thing you should focus on, because you need to see a new idea through to completion before you go jumping on a bunch of different other things. And so my thing right now, I am focused on trying to get up a direct selling Shopify store for my books, other folks' books. Chris Fox, Monica Leonel have said that I can sell some of their books as well, some courses, some other stuff. And I've been excited about this for a while, but other cool new ideas distracting me. So my team helped on this, doing some reflection on my own helped on this, but I decided, all right, none of these other crazy ideas, I'm not going to focus on any of them until I see this one through. Then if I want to, I would be open to other things, but you got to go all the way before you go in multiple ways.
I love that. Yeah. Yep. So many things telling us to go other ways, though.
It's true. So many things.
Mm-hmm.
But we can resist.
We can. Set that clear purpose. Go
exactly.
for it.
Exactly. So, Claire, any last thoughts here before we head off into the sunset?
If you backed my Kickstarter, you'll be hearing from me a lot soon. If you did not, you probably won't be hearing much from me for a little while.
Yeah, that is normal. That is normal. Awesome. And thank you to everybody who joined Author Ad School this quarter. Excited to do the whole thing. Right after this, we do our quarterly orientation session and karaoke party. I will be singing, let's see if I can pull it up. I'll be singing a song from Encanto, and I'll be singing a song from Dear Evan Hansen, which I saw on Broadway just a couple weeks ago. So,
oh, nice.
But yeah, so karaoke stylings in the Author Ad School program. That's one of the things you get. For Claire, I'm Brian. Have a great week of book selling, everybody. And we'll be back next week for episode 434. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Books Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy bookselling.